Greetings, and welcome to the 13th podcast in the Energy Links podcast series. I'm your host, Paul Rippey, and I'm here at the Environmental Protection Agency with Jacob Moss. Jacob Moss is a senior advisor at the EPA. He led the effort to create the Partnership for Clean Indoor Air at the 2002 World Summit for Sustainable Development in Johannesburg. He is currently leading U.S. government efforts to dramatically expand this work to the global scale. Jacob Moss, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Paul. Glad to be here.
Jacob, could you tell us about the Partnership for Clean Indoor Air?
Well, we started the partnership in 2002 at the World Summit for Sustainable Development in Johannesburg in South Africa. We've been asked to come up with ideas to promote at the World Summit that really focused on the highest risk areas that people were facing in the developing world, and what could we do to leverage the public interest within government with the private sector interest in addressing this. And from EPA's perspective, and certainly from an air pollution perspective, where I focus my work, this is sort of the obvious thing to focus on. There's ambient air pollution and there's indoor air pollution, and globally indoor air pollution from cook stove smoke kills about twice as many people as ambient air pollution. So that's what took us to the issue. It was really motivated by public health interests and concerns, and that's why we created the partnership.
So what have you done to date, or what successes has the Partnership for Clean Indoor Air had?
Well, I think it's pretty profound, actually. We started out, it was nothing pre-existing about it when we started. It was starting absolutely from scratch. We had about 13 partners initially that we identified. And since that, under the leadership of the two folks at EPA here who run it, it's grown to over 320 partners now that work in over 115 countries. Over the past 4 or 5 years, they have reached, I think, 2.5 million homes with clean cooking practices. I think that's about 18 million people. It's a higher ratio than we typically use, simply because a lot of those stoves are working with institutions, so you're reaching more people. But about 2.5 million homes over the past several years, and that rate of growth is very rapid, so that we expect to double those results in the next couple of years and then double again after that.
Is PCIA simply dealing with stoves, or do you look at other sources of indoor air pollution?
It's looking at household energy use related to cooking and heating, and in some cases lighting, but mostly cooking and heating. So the solutions there span different stove technologies, different fuels, the interactions between those, people's cultural habits, the ventilation of a house. All of that are things that we think about and things that we look at, and we try to present integrated solutions. One thing that we thought of sort of coming into the partnership when we created it and has proven true, and we've gotten a lot more sophisticated about it, but we always recognize that to address this issue in a comprehensive way, you have to deal with four things. So one is creating solutions that people want. So you're meeting the social and cultural needs. One is creating solutions that can be scalable in a commercial setting. So you're creating products that can be sold in the marketplace and that people will want. Three is making sure that the technology is right, so improving the performance and the design of the stoves over time and testing for that. And then the fourth is monitoring and evaluating so that you get what, as Kirk Smith says, you get what you inspect, not what you expect.
What have you inspected, or what, besides the quantitative outreach numbers, which are very impressive, what can you say about the improvement in air? Because it's one thing to say they've got a new stove, but then what's been the impact in whatever you're measuring, which would be gases and particles?
Sure. Well, I mean, one of the sort of historical problems with the field was that people were often promoting stoves that hadn't been tested. So you had people that were very well-intentioned who had designed a stove and were actually in the field promoting this and actively getting it into people's homes. And when they finally got around to doing the testing to see how it compared to a traditional cooking practice, it was very similar, or in some cases actually even worse than a three-stone fire. Three-stone fires, people have been using them for millions of years because they're pretty good at taking fire and getting the heat into a pot. So there's a reason why people use it. One thing that we've done in other partners as well, not just EPA, but Shell Foundation and other funders, is require that when we're funding projects or when we work with people, that the stoves that they're working with have to be absolutely tested. I mean, there's different layers of testing. You can do a laboratory test, you can do a quicker test in the field, and then you can do a much longer test in the field. But at the minimum, we need to see that these stoves that are being promoted are going to have substantial reductions in emissions, increases in efficiency, so reductions in fuel use, reductions in emissions, and not sacrificing anything on safety or reliability, and hopefully reaching cost as well. So we've done a lot of work on that. We and our partners together have sort of, I think, tested probably at least 50, if not 100 different stoves and gotten very quantitative information on the performance of them compared to a baseline, looking at starting from a cold start, from a hot start if the stove's already going, looking at particulate emissions, usually fine particle emissions, carbon monoxide. Those are the two things we usually test for, although there's a whole range of other toxic chemicals that are part of the smoke. And then in the field as well, there's a whole sort of series of monitoring evaluation protocols that we've developed that our partners are using to evaluate their performance.
Is that information available, like Consumer Reports? .epa sort of thing, or is there a way to get it?
It's mostly available on the PCIA website, so that's www.pciaonline.org.
You and I have talked about, I love this conversation, about how stoves might be coming to the same tipping point that other technologies have come to. And I want to talk about that, but before we do, we're going to take a very short musical break.
Donkey beef, donkey beef, donkey beef, donkey beef, donkey beef. But I'm relieved you don't need no leaf to eat the donkey beef.
Welcome back. I'm here with Jacob Moss of the EPA's Partnership for Clean Indoor Air. Just before the break, we were talking about how stoves might be at a tipping point. And what I understand about this, to put it in context, is that stoves might be coming to the same point that, for instance, communication technology came to when, with the advent of the mobile phone, it stopped making any sense whatever to cut down trees and make telephone poles, just put up a cell tower. And I think the same thing has happened with lighting, where kerosene lighting for almost everybody that's lighting their home with kerosene could now be replaced more economically with a better, cleaner, safer solar product. So there's some hope that stoves might be coming to the same point. Is that right?
I think that's absolutely right. It's a slightly different model than those two fields because I don't know of anyone who's, other than in terms of electric stoves and extending the grid in that case or using other sources of electricity, I don't know of anyone who's actively suggesting, for example, extending gas lines into villages throughout the developing world. So it's a different model. But the point, I think, is a very accurate one. And the context that I usually talk about it in is there's just a tremendous amount that we've learned over the past, I would say, 7 years since we started the partnership, but even over the past 10 to 15 years, even before we started. So now we know a heck of a lot more about the health impacts of using an improved stove, and that gives us greater confidence that the interventions are actually creating the health benefits that we're after. We know a heck of a lot more about the climate impacts, so that's bringing a whole world of new interest and donors into this field that creates interest from their perspective largely around black carbon and the short-term levers on climate change. From the stove world perspective, it's actually more of an interest in terms of carbon financing because that financing, mostly right now in the voluntary markets, although that could be changing, is a way of them finding ways to either sell their stoves at a cheaper cost or expand their market size. And it's opening up all sorts of new markets for folks. We've also, I mentioned before the break, gotten a lot more rigorous around stove testing and stove performance and monitoring and evaluation, which is wonderful. We're also seeing a whole slew of different kinds of business models that have the potential, or in some cases right now, are actually growing at a very, very rapid rate, and in the longer term have the potential to reach much larger scales. So all of that combined, to me, sort of makes this an incredibly exciting moment for this field. You're at this moment where you've got the private sector guys involved, you've got the health people, the climate folks, the financing tools coming to the table, and how can we take all of this interest and put it into a sort of coordinated strategy to push the field past a tipping point so that we're not all doing individual project-based stuff as has been happening for the past 20 years.
Now, right before we started this podcast, you were showing me some stoves.
Yeah.
Maybe you could talk about those. I wish we had a video now, but we don't. But could you talk about like what kind of stove you think that people might be using in large numbers in the coming years?
Sure. Well, the particular stoves I was showing you could cover a couple different types of fuels and a different cost range and different kind of settings where electricity is available even in an intermittent way versus not. There was actually two stoves I was showing you by StoveTech, which is a group that's based in Oregon, but they partner with Chinese manufacturers to make a very high-quality stove with a really good combustion chamber, and they can sell that stove for, I think it says on the stove, for about $10. It's obviously more if you ship it from China to different markets in the developing world, but probably $10 to $15 in that price range. The EnviroFit stove is one that's it's a company based in Fort Collins, and they've developed with Oak Ridge National Labs a metal alloy combustion chamber that will last about 5 years as opposed to the ceramic liners that typically last about 2 years. And they think that they can sell those stoves. Both of those companies could mass produce their stoves in the millions very, very quickly. The EnviroFit stove, I think, is about $20 to $25 in the marketplace. And then I showed you the Philips stove, which they're hoping to introduce into the marketplace in India this winter. And the price there is around $50. And that's got a fan on it, so it gets much, much cleaner emissions. And so the way I tend to think of it is these are all much better products than existed several years ago. What we hope in the next 5 years is that we'll get really high-quality stoves at the cost of the Stovetech stove, for example, on the order of $10 to $15, but are the quality and performance of what we've got in the Philips stove right now. So if we can do that and we can expand the develop the distribution chains to get to that point right now, we'll be able to substitute in those improved products as they come online and reach the marketplace.
And I can imagine you could make stoves like the Philips, not you, but one could make stoves like the Philips stove with the fan, but for people off-grid.
Absolutely right. I mean, there's several people right now that are making stoves that, actually Philips' earlier version did this, and they're trying to improve that right now, so that's not what they're introducing, but there's several people, groups right now that are trying to apply existing thermoelectric devices, so existing technology, to drive a fan. So as the stove starts up and it gets hot, then you take that heat and very crudely convert that to electricity to drive the fan, and once you've got the fan in there, then you're getting the exceptional air mixing and the airflow that drives the wonderful combustion, and you can easily get 95% reductions in emissions compared to a traditional stove.
Exactly. I'm just thinking that's like an automobile where you take some of the, you use the engine, which is not very efficient, to generate electricity, and then you have all sorts of little valves opening and closing and preheating and catalyzing and multiple spark plugs in a chamber, just very fine-tuned to get more mileage. And so it costs you a little bit, but just a very tiny bit for the electricity. And then use it use that electricity very, very efficiently to increase the efficiency of the whole process.
That's right. Yeah. It's the same thing, and I'll take it one step further. There's a lot of excitement. There are people who are actually introducing into the marketplace now, and there's a lot of other people who are developing products that could take that, exactly what you just said, and create a whole new paradigm of how to develop demand around stoves, by which I mean take that electricity, produce more than you need to drive a fan, and put a battery charger into the outside or a cell phone charger, whatever you want. So you can all of a sudden charge your cell phone, or you can light some light bulbs for your house or LED lights. And all of a sudden the stove ceases to be simply a device for cooking. It ceases to be sort of an energy source for a household. And you know, the fear there is that if it's not a good stove, then you'll be doing that indoors and creating more pollution. But if it's a really good stove, that wouldn't necessarily be the case. You could even have two stoves and put one outside and develop a small business. You know, one of our partners in Rwanda right now, this has a guy who's he's partnered with. He bought the stove essentially, and he has a little restaurant where he cooks food for people. And while he's cooking it, he recharges their cell phone. He charges them for both, and he's making money off of it. And it's just a wonderful paradigm there.
That's wonderful. That really is a paradigm shift. And I'll tell you, I've been thinking, okay, you've got stoves over here, and you got lighting over here. No connection. Couldn't be any connection. It's just like, I mean, cell phones would never have anything to do with computers. You know, same sort of things.
That's right. Well, people are also using cell phones now to as remote sensing devices, and you can put a sensor on there and get much better data quality to send in to measure the performance of an improved stove as well.
There's an app for that, as they say. So, as you know, we have a particular interest at the Energy Links Project in seeing the ways that the power, the outreach, the financial resources, and certainly in some cases the real creativity of those who are providing financial services to the poor, how that can be harnessed to improve energy use, both for efficiency and cleanliness and everything like that. So what do you see as the critical ways that financial services for the poor can be used to support efforts to address the issue of clean indoor air?
There's a whole slew of ideas that jump to mind when you ask me that, Paul. Two of the biggest barriers, I would say, to reaching a really serious scale of this for solutions to these issues are, one, how do you get really good quality products to tens, hundreds of millions of homes? Just physically, how do you get them there? How do you make them available to them? So that's distribution chains and sales chains and service chains. And, you know, I'm not a microfinance expert, but as I understand it, that's whenever you have a point of profit, you've got an opportunity for microfinance. So a lot of these mass manufacturers, they don't want to be selling stoves in villages in India. They want to import them to a warehouse or to a port and then hand it over to local distribution networks. So every piece along that distribution network is a profit center and could be leveraged by microfinance. And I would love to see the joining of these kinds of distribution chains that exist already, people who have nothing to do with stoves in their lives, but they know how to get products into villages, linked up with the manufacturers who have off-the-shelf, ready-to-go products. They're really good, high-quality products, and marry those two businesses together so you're getting the products to the villages. Secondly, you've got a huge barrier for the really poorest of the poor people in the world who aren't making, you know, even a dollar or two a day, and how can they afford something that's even going to cost 10, 15 bucks? And the question there is, what sort of village lending operations or abilities exist in the world that could help provide very low-cost loans to the poor in ways that aren't going to burden them in terms of being in poverty for a long time, but allow them access to financial resources to purchase things like this. Both of the stoves I mentioned, StoveTech and EnviroFit, they have combustion chambers that could be used to be the innards, in some sense, the intel inside of a mud stove built in place. So you could have a very cheap stove with a high-quality combustion chamber that wouldn't cost $10 or $15, but instead would cost $4. And that's a way to really lower the cost and maybe make something affordable. But the poorest of the poor would probably still require some level of financing to make that purchase.
Right. And I would love to work on that idea with you, by the way.
That'd be great.
Jacob, thanks for coming on the show and just congratulations on your work. I find this very, very, very exciting. Thanks to Big Little Dipper Dipper for the music at the break. We'll be back soon with another podcast. And in the meantime, may all your indoor air be clean.
The Energy Links podcast is brought to you by the Academy for Educational Development Field Project, www.fieldsupportlowa.org/energylinks, and the Center for Financial Inclusion at Action International, www.action.org/center, with the generous assistance of the United States Agency for International Development, USAID, and the Wallace Global Foundation. Of course, the views expressed are not necessarily those of the sponsors. Your comments and questions are welcome. Please send them to energylinks2009@gmail.com.